This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Well, bringing you all the up-to-date information on sexual health and well-being. Brought to you by the Victorian AIDS Council on Joy 94.9.
Joy.
Hello and welcome to Well, brought to you for another week by the Victorian AIDS Council. I'm Adam and my co-host tonight is Jessie. So how are you tonight, Jessie, and ready for an action-packed show?
I'm good, thank you. Of course, I'm always ready.
So for those who have never tuned into us, well, a lot of people have turned into me, but they've turned around again. So for people who have never actually tuned into us, or Joy for that matter, if you could explain well, how would you explain it?
Well, it's pretty much we talk about sex, health and well-being in our gender, sex and sexually diverse community.
Okay. Pretty good overview. I like it. Short
and sweet.
Simple, sweet.
Exactly.
Straight to the point. So what is on for tonight's show?
So tonight is part of our election series and we have our very own John Manwaring, Senior Policy Analyst from Victorian AIDS Council, and we'll be delving into more of the meatier areas of the upcoming federal election and more about what topics will be directly relevant to some members of our community.
Yeah, so we did the show last week that was talking about sort of ineligibility a couple of weeks ago, I think it actually might have been. We're just on all the time. We love it so much. It was about inequality, and this is part of the election series. So now we're actually going to delve into the issues that are directly relevant to our community and other members of our community, just to get a bit of an insight. Because sometimes you hear so much about the election, you're like, "What? What's that?
Yeah.
What's this?"
You just don't really know specifics. So
yeah.
We can iron that out for you guys and explain it a bit better, which would be good.
Absolutely. And I'm going to get like a wealth of information because I'm not going to tell you who I vote for because that's kind of whatever. But anywho, so if people want to get involved in the conversation or ask John a question about some of the topics that we're going to be talking about tonight, or even just political hot pockets that they may want to ask that are controversial questions, how can they be involved?
Yeah, so feel free to ask us questions. We love it when our audience gets involved. If you have any suggestions or even just comments, we can email us straight here into the studio, which is at onair@joy.org.au, or you can send a text straight to us, which is 0427 Joy 949.
Lovely. Well, this is Well on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Joining us in the studio is John Manwaring, the Senior Policy Analyst from the Victorian AIDS Council. So welcome, John. How are you tonight?
I'm well, especially considering you almost pronounced my name correctly. Almost.
Almost.
Moving on. As part of our election series, we've got you in again, John. I'm not going to say your last name ever again.
Good.
But just to get some of the media bits that would kind of be more directly relevant to members of our community, because as Jesse and I were just discussing, you hear quite a lot about what's happening with the election, what politicians are saying, what they're promising, and you kind of go, what's directly relevant to me? Because there's so much out there.
Yeah, so one of the topics or hot topic areas that we want to know about is HIV treatment and prevention. That's got a lot of attention lately. So what types of topics are likely to be debated about for the upcoming election?
Well, debated might be a strong word when it comes to the also saucy topic of HIV treatment and prevention. It's obviously important to our community, but you know, it's not something that's necessarily going to register to the broader community or in a big way in an election. That said, the election is really important because we have some interesting discussions happening around PrEP in particular, but also some of the potential to iron out the inequities in terms of HIV treatment and prevention. So what's been done so far by the sector is FAO, which is the Australian Federation of AIDS Organizations, one of many acronyms we get to deal with. They sent out quite a spiff-looking little election survey, front and back, one page, and it just really concisely said, these are the things that are very important to us as a community, and have asked the parties what they're going to do about it. We've heard back from the Liberals and the Greens. We're still waiting to hear back from Labor, and once we do that, they'll be publishing the results. But there are a bunch of things happening there.
What are the sort of major topics that sort of come to the forefront of your mind or that were included in the survey that were sort of, I guess, waiting to see what different political parties say about them?
Well, the biggest one is probably PrEP because, you know, hot topics are the fun topics.
Oh, yes. We do love our PrEP.
Yes, of course. And hopefully one day we won't have to worry about it again. But for now...
Yeah. And so what are they saying?
So really it's a weird situation with that because on the one hand, you have to wait for the regulatory process to do its thing. So you have to wait for PBAC, another acronym, to subsidize it and list it on the PBS. But what they do basically is say to the Minister of Health, here's a recommendation. We think you should list PrEP on the PBS. The minister can do a lot of things with that. They can say, well, thanks for the recommendation, but, you know, get stuffed. Or they can say, great. And so what we're trying to tell the minister and get the parties to commit to is, assuming the PBAC says yes to PrEP, that the minister and the parties will then say, awesome, we're going to fully fund this, we're going to make it widespread availability, and just really promote it in the way they've done with like hepatitis C treatment, where they made that billion-dollar commitment. So that's what we're looking for with PrEP, that sort of commitment.
So at this stage, we're sort of waiting around then?
Yeah, it's kind of twiddling our thumbs until I think it's about mid-August that we'll find out what PBAC has to say. And, you know, the first time around, most things get knocked back. There are a lot of discussions involved. So it could be later this year, it could be middle of next year. We don't know yet. So come August, whoever is in government, we should hopefully have some idea of what they'll do. But hopefully we'll also have a commitment from all the parties before the election that if that happens, PrEP will be widely available.
Yeah.
And so what about something else then?
The one that is probably most glaring is what we call Medicare ineligibles, because you think of a lot of people come to this country and they cannot access Medicare. So unless you are a permanent resident or a citizen, you don't have access to it. But considering in the state of Victoria, for example, higher education is considered one of its top exports because they are providing it to overseas people, you think of the number of people that need to come here. They need medical help, and they can get some through private cover, but it's limited. So think of the number of people who come over. They might have HIV, they might have other bloodborne viruses, or they might be at risk of these, and they can't get medication.
So you're recommending to expand this, are you?
So what we're saying is the federal government should commit, whoever is in government should commit to providing access to medication and prevention for Medicare ineligibles. Look, as somebody who was a Medicare ineligible for 3 years, it is a hellish process trying to access medication from overseas.
Absolutely.
It's not easy and it needs to be easier.
And so what is the main reason as to why you wouldn't be considered eligible for medication? I mean... Or medical treatment. Yeah.
Other than the fact that you're not from here.
And that's it. It's just that you're not from here. It's medic, and rightly, I'm not going to say this is a very tricky one. I think I understand why you would want to restrict it, because it is a really generous health benefit system, like one of the most generous in the world, and it does need to be solvent. It needs to be protected. That said, there are some issues that we believe are critical enough that they deserve an exception, and HIV is one of those, especially considering we've come so close to reaching this goal of zero new infections, and within 5 years, really have a chance of stopping them, that we say, all right, you have these little groups now. It's not the big groups. The big groups are more or less taken care of. We'd have these little groups that we really need to focus on. And so Medicare ineligibles are one of them. If we can make sure that people with HIV who are coming here have easy access to treatment for the duration of their stay, they'll no longer be at risk of either transmitting or contracting HIV, which would be absolutely remarkable and would help us keep HIV under control here. So that's really freaking important.
And so if you were to think about it pragmatically, would it be kind of, because I know there's places like Melbourne Sexual Health Centre where if you don't, if you're not a resident or a permanent citizen, that you can actually access, but it's very limited in terms of what you can.
And it's very discretionary because, Melbourne Sexual Health thinks Victoria is a state of 5.5 million people. And it is the one place you can access it for free, and not always. It's at the discretion of the doctors there. So if they think you have, they basically can say based on your need, based on the severity of your case. So if you have a decent income, maybe not enough to buy the medication, but a decent income, your health is relatively good, they might weigh up that and say, all right, you may need it in a general sense, but we can't afford to give it to you because there is so much pressure on Melbourne Sexual Health, so much.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are a number of ways that we can look at. It would be not only cost neutral, but cost effective. You actually save money by giving these people free medication access.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll get something back from the parties again. I wish I had those already, but 2 weeks left in the election, we should have something soon.
Well, we will have something soon.
Joy 94.9.
And this is Well on Joy 94.9. So we've spoken about a couple of topics. So we spoke about PrEP and we spoke about Medicare ineligibles. So what are the other topics that sort of come to the forefront of your mind or that actually should be at the forefront of the community's inquiring with their local parliamentarian?
There's so many. It's tricky, but one that I think is something we really need to start focusing on, and it hasn't been discussed a whole lot here, but if we think last year, New South Wales did something really remarkable. They said that when it comes to what are known as S100 treatments, which are really specialized things, so it's like certain cancer treatments, HIV treatments, hepatitis E, you have to have, if you're a doctor, you have to have certain qualifications in order to prescribe them. They said, all right, we want people to take these up. We want preventive treatments. We want treatments that will help people. So no more copays. It's a small thing. It doesn't cost much, but you don't have to pay a copay for any of these treatments anymore.
What do you mean by copay exactly?
So if you think you go to the pharmacy and a medication might cost, you know, $1,000 in real terms, but you go to a pharmacy or a chemist and you pay $37, $38,
right.
I think is your Medicare, your Medicare copay.
Yeah.
So
okay.
That's your share. That's basically saying, you know what, we're going to get rid of that last impediment, that last burden on you, and just say, here it is for you.
So and free medication.
Free medication for certain things. You know, it's not like saying everything needs it, but for certain things where it is quite a burden, and especially for people who have really complex conditions and they often have a lot of medications they have to take. It's small, but it's significant, because what we actually found just last month, there was a study that came out of Denmark. They've reduced the number of HIV infections in their country and then increased the number of people treated to ridiculous levels, not seen anywhere else in the world, simply by providing free access to medication since 1996. And I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but they were absolutely remarkable. And so again, looking at where we are in Australia, so close to ending new HIV infections, say, well, why not? It's a really low cost thing. It will help more people get on treatment. It will help them take better care of their health in a general sense.
Yeah.
That's something we need to start exploring.
So is it the financial prohibitive that's, I guess, potentially where people might not be taking the medications they should because they can't afford it with complex issues?
Yeah, in some cases. You think a lot of people are on, you know, they have healthcare cards, so it's subsidized. But even so, it's a really fine balance for a lot of people. It's, okay, I have to pay, you know, sometimes it's a $38 copay. I think in Queensland it was as high as $200 a month. It varies around the country just based on what the state decides to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you think of situations like, well, do I take my medication or do I buy food?
Sometimes it adds another barrier, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And sometimes it does boil down to that math. It's like, all right, what do I do? Everybody's going to choose food. That sort of. So get rid of that. Take the extra stress off. Take the extra burden off. And any removal of any impediment for somebody to access a treatment is going to be an improvement in uptake of treatment. Again, it's something that's really just now coming on the radar. It hasn't been discussed in depth yet, but I think it's something that needs to be discussed and apply pressure to the parties to really commit to it because it is so cheap to do.
Yeah. So, well, one of the other topics that we were looking at as well was talking about home testing. What have you got to say about that?
Do it. Oh, my God, do it. No, it's really remarkable because it's been available overseas for over a decade. Well, not easily available, but available. So far, I think we only have one in Australia that's been approved, but it's not yet available for purchase because there is...
It's on the testing trial.
It's effective. These tests are accurate and effective. They're rapid tests. You can do them really easily at home. You just swab your gums and stick it in a thing, wait 20 minutes, and you have a result. But the concern is, the main concern that's been cited, is that people won't present for other care or for other tests if they're at home. So it's like somebody might get the one that's cited, and it's so melodramatic that I hate to repeat it, but it's so often said, is, well, what if they go, they take their test, it comes back positive, and they decide to kill themselves?
Yeah. Well. Or I have heard when we looked into the study, it's also, I guess, you know, when we do rapid testing at our rapid testing centres, it's so important to have pre- and post-test counselling.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know that that was a factor pointed out that you obviously not have if you have home testing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, other than that, what else do you think would be
Well, they're important. Those are important issues, and they're legitimate concerns. But what people need to remember is that the more people test, the more likely you are to catch an HIV infection, the more likely that person will be able to get on treatment sooner, which will mean they have a better prognosis for the rest of their life, that it becomes less aggressive, and they just health overall is better promoted. Yeah. Mm. So I think what we need to make sure is that these tests in Australia are linked to Australian resources. So if there are concerns that somebody might lack pre- and post-test counselling, that there are websites, there are 1-800 numbers or 1-300 numbers in Australia.
One will send you in a different direction. Yes.
I don't know the difference yet. Telephones are confusing. The point is linking people to resources that they need to make sure that they're making good choices. Because when it's been used in other countries, it's been used to great success, home testing. And people have tested more frequently. They haven't had the concerns, or rather the concerns people have had haven't manifested. Yeah. People haven't committed suicide. They've linked to care, and it's been really great.
Well, being part of the fourth clinical trial here, which was the home-based rapid HIV testing trial, it was kind of interesting to sort of see people going, oh, well, kind of, what is it? And sort of, you know, asking exactly how does the device work and whatnot, and sort of saying, well, a reactive result isn't a positive result.
Mm.
In same way that a rapid result in pronto is always followed up with blood serology.
Yes, yes.
Because there's also that window period.
Absolutely.
There's false positives. So it's about sort of making people aware of what it is. So whilst there's pros and cons to it,
yeah,
I think actually advocating for it to be included in the toolkit is just something additional we can have.
Yes, and it's important to remember it is a toolkit. It's not like we're saying here's a test and you're never going to go back to a sexual health center, you're never going to go to your GP again, you're never going to get tested for any STIs. This is it. Nobody is saying that. What we are saying is here is another option for people who need it. And take advantage of the whole host of options available to you and take charge of your sexual health, because that's the way you take care of yourself, fairly common sense, and essentially saying, hey, federal government, approve these things, expedite the regulatory processes, and fund them because they're important and they work.
Joy 94.9.
Well, if you guys have just joined us, we are chatting with John Manwaring, the senior policy analyst. Sorry. I got your name right and then I stuffed the rest of it up. I got nervous. From VAC. About election issues relevant to our community. So another huge area of interest is that of the GLBTI aging. So what are some of the major issues that are likely to come up during the election that are relevant to our community?
It's odd. With LGBTI aging, there hasn't been much talked about yet.
Okay.
Which is kind of surprising, because what happened was I don't remember which Prime Minister it was, if it was Gillard or Rudd, but under the previous Labour government, there was a lot of discussion. There was a lot of prep work that went into doing these things, and they did a whole funding round. So all these programs are happening that were focused on LGBTI people and the different issues they had aging. And the Abbott government kept them, but made it really clear really soon after they were elected, they were like, this is the last round, we're never doing this again.
Okay.
So, which is remarkable, because some really incredible programs were coming out of it. I worked for one at Living Positive Victoria. It was the Senior Voices Project. They were basically training up HIV-positive LGBTI people, mostly gay men, to go out to aged care facilities, care workers, training facilities, and talk about it, just share their experience about what it meant to age with HIV, to be a gay man, who was aging, and all the different things that entails. And, you know, there are things going on at Arches, which is out of La Trobe University. There's called Val's Cafe, Alzheimer's Australia. They've developed these dementia resources, really remarkable things. And then all of a sudden, poof, gone.
So, well, why do you think it fell off the radar?
I think it was ideologically driven. I don't think Tony Abbott and the really conservative side of the party wanted to see that happen, because there were people there. So like Senator Dean Smith, gay man, liberal from Western Australia, really keen on it, really dedicated to it. And you could see he was just gutted when they got rid of it. So I think there is a possibility it will come back, but it was definitely ideology. They didn't see there being a particular need or anything really special or exceptional about the gay community when it came to aging.
And so, in your view and with your experience, what are some of the key issues with GLBTI and aging?
One of the big ones is having to go back into the closet. Because you think the people who are entering like old age now, they've seen the absolute worst of it. They're the ones that remember Stonewall. They're the ones that remember the HIV epidemic firsthand. They're the ones who might be HIV positive, who had a really difficult time coming out of the closet. Now they're having to go into aged care facilities. And because of the, I don't want to call it homophobia, but just the ignorance that exists among a lot of people, both who manage them, who work in them, who don't know how to deal with it, they don't understand the different considerations. These people feel like they have no choice but to go back into the closet and when they go into these facilities. But then some of the issues that people can't wrap their head around is that, you know, same-sex partners. Like having to explain, like,
what? What are you talking about with your same-sex partners?
Well, to be more blunt, a lot of people who work in aged care facilities don't realize that old people have sex too. You know, remember, we forget the operative word there is people. People have sex, regardless of age.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have sex. And so to explain, it's like, no, I need two beds. This is not my sister. This is my partner. That sort of thing. It's a concept that a lot of people don't get, and then they react poorly in those circumstances.
Yeah.
Another one is, you know, if you have HIV and have lived a long time with that, you are likely to have a bunch of comorbidities or multimorbidities, all these different conditions associated with it that are exacerbated by the really poisonous medications that existed early on. And there's complex needs about medication adherence, about what medications conflict with others and all these things. And for some people in aged care facilities, that just doesn't register. They don't understand the need to really arrange these things in a helpful manner. Another one is HIV itself, or even just any diseases. A lot of people in aged care facilities don't understand universal precautions or standard precautions, so they'll do things like wear three face masks on top of one another. Several pairs of gloves. They'll wear hazmat suits or want to put on hazmat suits. We've heard a gamut of stories that are just really, you know, they're disturbing for us, but it would be devastating for somebody who is really at the most vulnerable time of their life. They have been used to being in charge of everything that they do, and all of a sudden they have to be taken care of.
Yeah,
it's
very confronting.
So it's something that needs to be discussed again. It needs to be raised again, because these programs that came out of that initial round of grants from the federal government did a lot of good work, and to stop it right now is going to be a huge disservice to the LGBTI community and to the aged care sector.
Well, stick around, because we're going to be talking about the marriage equality plebiscite.
Holla.
Dun, 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 dun. But this is Well on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Have you ever had a secret? I mean, not just any secret, a big secret. The kind that hurts to keep in. I've never said this out loud before, but I'll try my best. I mean, you don't really know me, so I guess I can tell you. Okay, here we go. I'm gay.
You're accepted. The Facebook app that allows LGBTI youth to come out anonymously. Visit youreaccepted.com.au. Another community message supported by Joy 94.9.
And this is Well on Joy 94.9. And we're chatting with John Manawaring.
Sure.
The senior policy analyst. Senior policy analyst.
You did it too.
That'll teach me. From the Victorian AIDS Council. Now, one of the biggest topics that everyone has either mentioned or knows about or might have heard about, but we thought we'd actually give it just a little bit of time, a little bit of air and a little bit of breathing space. Mm. And it kind of falls with the election and kind of doesn't, because it's a separate sort of issue, but it's the plebiscite.
Mm.
Now, for those of us that don't know, including myself, because just now we're talking about, like, what's a plebiscite? What's a thing?
Yes.
What's a conscious vote? What's a plebiscite? What is the difference, or what is?
So a plebiscite is kind of like, do you have student councils in schools here?
Yeah.
It's kind of like
I'm not from here, but I'm assuming they do. I do know
longer
us.
Than I.
This is true.
I think. So it's kind of like a student council election. You know, it's like everybody shows up, everybody votes, some stuff happens at the end, but in the end, it doesn't matter. It's not binding. It has no real meaning. That's essentially what a plebiscite is.
When you say everybody, you mean people in the parliament, not public vote.
This is a public vote. So it is a public vote on a particular issue that has no effect whatsoever. So think of it, contrast it this way. Back in the 60s, there was the referendum on whether to change the constitution and its references to indigenous people. So there was a big referendum. Everybody had to vote. But when they voted yes, constitution was changed, something happened. A plebiscite is like it's just a little vote. It's like, what do you think about this? It's like, okay, thanks, kids. That's nice.
And is the aim behind that just to kind of gauge an idea of what the public thinks officially?
That's ostensibly what it is. It's basically cowardice. So I'm not going to mix words on this. This is cowardice on the part of the previous government and the current government to just punt a really important issue that they know they're going to lose in the end, but they don't want to be politically liable for taking the position that is going to win, because they know if they did, they would suffer the consequences of their base of voters. Because 70%, 70 plus percent of people in Australia support the right to marriage equality. And so people like Tony Abbott, who are holding it up, know they're going to lose. Like, it will, the vote will be closer, but they know they're going to lose, and they know marriage equality will be a reality in this country soon. So this is just a really expensive and difficult way to delay that from happening.
And so if we don't need it and it doesn't do anything, why are we having it? I mean, if we now I understand that it's kind of pointless. I thought it was like, well, if everybody says yes, then hey, you know, everyone can get married. No. But why do the politicians think that this is actually going to allay people that are actually fighting for marriage equality?
It won't. It's a ploy for Malcolm Turnbull to keep his job, because it's not binding.
Who's the ploy to, though? Because
it's to a very conservative base of voters. And politicians, for that matter. It's Corey Bernardi's. It's George Christensen's. It's this really small segment of the Liberal National parties that say, we can't abide the concept of two women or two men getting married. That's the worst thing we could think of, because, you know, child rape. When it comes to that in the Catholic Church, they're not that fussed. But when it comes to two gay men being in love, that's a bit of an issue. So it's pardon my cynicism, but that's what's going on. Let's call it spade a spade. We don't need one. The High Court made that very clear, because a couple years ago, the ACT said, all right, we're going to kind of take advantage of some semantics in the law and say, well, if you're not going to do anything about it, maybe a state or a territory can do it, and we'll legislate for same-sex marriage. And they did, and it went to the High Court, and the High Court said, well, yeah, but no, you don't have the power to do that as a territory. And they really explicitly said, the parliament has the power to make this law. It squarely sits with the parliament. And it was almost a repudiation. I don't know that the plebiscite idea had come up just yet, but it was very much a repudiation of Parliament for failing to act. And so the proper place for this sort of change is for Parliament to have an up or down vote and simply to say, do we have marriage equality or not?
And is that the conscience vote, where you allow anybody that's in the Parliament to actually say what they feel or vote whichever way they want to vote?
Yeah, exactly.
And they're doing it on behalf of their constituents, but also on behalf of what they feel is socially responsible.
Yeah, so that's where it gets a little complex, because previously, the Liberal National parties had a binding no vote. So they said anything that came up regarding marriage equality, you have to vote no on, which is remarkable, because the entire time they said normally it's a conscience vote, but they refused a conscience vote on this. Whereas Labor will typically have binding votes, but they allowed a conscience vote. So the votes were all flipped around. It was all ridiculous. So when it comes to a conscience vote, if both parties had a conscience vote, Australian Marriage Equality, which is a not-for-profit that kind of lobbies on behalf of the issue, they've done kind of informal polling of members of parliament and found that if there was a conscience vote in both parties, marriage equality would be the law of the land today. But that hasn't happened.
And so what would you like to see happen if, in an ideal world, for this, for marriage equality to work, how would it work in your eyes, knowing the parliamentary system as you do?
Oh, God. So really, truly ideal world, I would like to see Malcolm Turnbull come out tomorrow, hold a press conference and say, I'm sick of being held hostage by the conservative fringe of my party. This is an issue that I feel strongly about, that I know what the right side of this issue is, and I'm going to say no to the plebiscite. I'm going to say no to $165 million waste of time and money. Mm. I'm going to say no to the really hideous discourse that's inevitably going to follow it, because as soon as you give somebody a license to say really hateful things about gay people, they are going to say some hateful things about gay people, and that is all that will accompany this plebiscite. He needs to stand up to his party. He needs to say, I might lose my job, they might kick me out, but you know what? Too bad. This needs to happen, and just do it already. That's the ideal. What's going to happen is we'll have an election.
Yeah, what's the reality then?
We'll have an election. If the Liberals get back into power, which is probably going to happen, the plebiscite will probably happen. There's a slight possibility that if their majority is narrowed significantly, or if it's a hung parliament, that the plebiscite will go away because somebody might negotiate as part of doing a deal with the coalition to give them government. They might say no plebiscite. It's entirely a possibility. We just don't know at this point. Or if Labour wins, then they said there will be no plebiscite and we will have, within 100 days of taking office, an up or down conscience vote on this issue.
Okay. Well, okay. I've learnt more tonight. And
I'm sitting here just like gobsmacked listening to you. I feel quite ignorant, but I'm definitely educated while sitting here with you, John, for sure.
Well, John, look, thanks very much for coming in and sort of chatting to us about a whole bunch of things that have to do with the election. I think, you know, we're learning more, and I hope the everybody out there is actually learning more, because we actually have had a quick message come in. And who is that from? It says, "While I am no fan of the coalition, Kevin Rudd told the Council of State Attorney Generals that he didn't believe in those sort of relationships." And that is from Graham. So I guess commentary, everybody's had one, different political parties have had one, and different, I guess, perspectives on the issue, unfortunately.
Look, it's one of those things, when it comes to politicians, you can hold grudges, we can hold grudges as long as we want, but I don't think we get that luxury as a community, unfortunately. Otherwise, we would be hating Barack Obama forever. We would be hating most people for a very long time if we held them to their previous positions and bullied and berated them for that.
Yeah.
I'm of the mind that when it comes to these issues that are important to us, we need to make peace with the fact that people are ignorant. People just don't know. And it's not necessarily coming from a place of malice. I don't know what Kevin Rudd was thinking when he said those words, but I do know that his actions as a prime minister suggested that he had moved forward. He made the most significant reforms in terms of legal recognition for same-sex couples than had been done previously in this country.
Yeah.
I think our task as a community is to meet these people where they're at, accept their ignorance, and say, okay, patiently, with understanding and kindness, say to them, this is why I believe what I believe. This is how this issue affects me. This is why it needs to change. And hope they come with you. Hope that at least plants a seed of change, of evolution in their minds.
Absolutely.
So,
I mean, fingers crossed, that's sort of, I guess, where we get to. But John, look, thanks very much for your efforts tonight. I guess the one thing that we did want to mention is that I guess we've all been in a bit of a shock the past week or so, reeling from the news out of Orlando of those killed and injured at the Pulse Gay nightclub. Our thoughts are with their friends and families and with GLBTI communities and allies everywhere affected by this tragedy. I guess while we find our own ways to process what has happened, our community is already sort of coming together to grieve and to remember in solidarity and in love. So I guess the main point would be to look after each other and know that we aren't alone. And I think that's been represented by the way countries and different people have reacted to this abhorrent crime. But if you need support, contact the Switchboard Victoria on 1800 184 527 or make an appointment with the VAC Counselling Services on 9865 6700. But basically, just keep each other safe and remember that just because it's past doesn't mean you might not be feeling from it. So always remember, services are out there, friends are out there, you're not alone, and there's always someone that can help. But this is Well on Joy 94.9, and this has been us for another week.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's been a pleasure. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
I just wanted to say thank you, Andy, for the flowers. Bye.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.